91.3 FM WLVR Bethlehem. You're listening to The Fritz Rock Show, and you just heard the latest single from Alan Parsons. It's really the title cut from Alan Parsons' latest album, All Our Yesterdays. And before that was I, Robot, and Breakdown, both from the same. And we also heard Call Up from Alan's Time Machine album. And we started that set with Side One. I just can't break that up. Side One of the Alan Parsons Project, Tales of Mystery and Imagination. And now the renowned recording artist and engineer, producer, songwriter, musician, Alan Parsons will be basically performing in his only East Coast visit with a live project to open Zollner's 2010 season on Saturday, September 11th. It is my distinct pleasure and honor to talk to this man right here, Alan Parsons. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Jay. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. And how are things out there in California right now?
We've had a record cool summer, actually. It's I'm fortunate. I live up in the hills, and so we're above the marine layer. But poor old holidaymakers, you know, who've been on the beaches of Santa Barbara, have had a really, really rough deal this year. But it's beautiful up here where I am.
Oh, nice. We're just finishing up with a bit of a heat wave here ourselves, and now we've got Earl coming up the East Coast here, so it's kind of cooled things off
a
little bit.
That's a worry, I guess. Yeah.
You know, this is, I have to tell you, Alan, this is really a big deal that you're coming to Bethlehem, and I've lived in this area on and off all my life, some 50 years, and I'll have to be honest with you, I don't remember Alan Parsons or the Alan Parsons Project or live project performing in the Allentown Bethlehem Eastern area in Pennsylvania. Do you remember ever playing this area?
Oh no, I don't. I know for sure that it's the first time we've been there.
Okay.
I think the closest we've been would be Scranton. How far away is Scranton?
Scranton's about 50 miles away from here.
Right. So we played there, and we've played. I think we've played Harrisburg once.
Okay. Well, Harrisburg's about an hour and a half away, almost.
Right.
Wow, okay. So
looking forward to it?
Oh, well, we're looking forward to it, I'll tell you.
The best thing of all is that it's sold out. So
it's sold out rather quickly, too.
So, well, that's always good news. That's always nice to know.
I think it's pretty much a testament to the fact that the Lehigh Valley knows that you haven't been here, and they're just so extremely excited to come out to see you and the band. And I wanted to ask you, what can we expect to hear from your vast catalog? I mean, it's a huge catalog, so what do you think the listener can expect in concert?
It's actually a very difficult choice for us because
we've
got 9 albums of stuff, all of which did pretty well. So we just have to really go with the most popular ones. But there's something that we have been doing just recently, which is playing The Tone of a Friendly Card, the entire piece.
Oh, nice.
And that's been going down really well. We did that on a European tour recently for the first time. And that really came from the fans. That came from you guys. We asked people to nominate their favorite tracks and what they would like to hear live. And that was one that came up. So we were pleased to comply with that request.
And I'll bet you they were.
It's been really fun playing that.
Yeah, and they were pleased to hear it as well. Now, you know, your career, there's so much that we can talk about, and we really don't have a lot of time, but many of our listeners know quite a bit about you. It's, you know, no secret that you were first known as a recording engineer, and many people are very in tune to the fact that you have an excellent ear for recording and for producing. But I wanted to ask you, how did you start so young? It's I'm looking at the Wikipedia biography. It says that you actually started at age 18 when you worked as an assistant engineer at Abbey Road. How did that start? How did you get this bug?
It actually started with a department of EMI Records that was allied to Abbey Road Studios.
Okay.
And that was in West London. It was a tape duplication facility when reel-to-reel tapes were still being released as tape records, as we called them.
Yeah.
And I worked there and learned a bit about sound and tape machines and so on, and then I just chose exactly the right time to apply for a job at Abbey Road when they were just firing a couple of people, and so I stepped in, and the rest is history. But I was just very, very lucky, very very fortunate to have been successful in landing a job there.
You were literally in the right place at the right time then.
Yes, and it was a very exciting time, of course, for recording, because the technology revolution in the analog, there's been a digital revolution, of course, but there was an analog revolution going on at that time. We were going to 4-track, then to 8-track, then to 16-track, then to 24-track, 48-track. And then the digital revolution came. So I've been, in the business during a very exciting period.
It has been very exciting, no doubt. And you've worked on some landmark albums. I mean, albums that have defined the rock genre. And I'm talking about the Beatles and working with Paul McCartney, Al Stewart, Year of the Cat. Such an amazing turn that you brought to that record as a producer. So you've produced so many records as well. And the one that most people truly recognize you, of course, for is the Dark Side of the Moon album. Now, how did that thing come together for you?
Which I did not produce.
You engineered. I'm talking engineering.
What's the difference between a producer and an engineer, you may ask? Millions of dollars is the answer.
Yeah, the producer gets...
In the case of Pink Floyd, anyway.
Yeah, the producer gets a point or two, you know?
Yeah.
But
no, I was paid £35 a week to make Dark Side of the Moon.
Wow. £35 a week. it's kind of funny now, isn't it?
Am I bitter? On occasion, yes. But hey, it paved the way for my future. So, I'm really not that bitter about it.
Well, I know that you engineered.
I'm very proud of it, as well.
You should be proud of it. It's set records in the Guinness Book of World Records and so forth for being on the charts for so long and so forth. But I think it was the first exposure of you as an engineer that really, really the world kind of picked up on this. Who is this Alan Parsons? He's just amazing. So I just wanted to congratulate you on your past work and let you know that, many of these things do not go unnoticed by your listeners and your fans. You know, it's even though you only got £35 a week, okay, it contributed to far much more for you,
Yes.
It really did.
It was Dark Side of the Moon that got my production career started. Straight into production literally the following year.
Mm-hmm.
I made the right decision not to work with them on their next album.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You turned down to work on Wish You Were Here because what were they offering you, £50 a week then, or what?
No, actually, they made me a very generous offer to work for them full time. I mean, I was also doing their live sound, engineering their live sound. So there was a full time job there, but I wanted to get into production and. At the time that they actually approached me for the next album, I'd already had my first hit as a producer, which was with Pilot.
Yes, I remember that band. In fact, I have a few pieces of Pilot vinyl in my collection.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure do. Absolutely, man. We know about you for many years, Alan. So
Pilot was certainly the first hit I had in America with Magic.
Magic, right.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's Magic. I remember.
I think it's been used in a car commercial recently, so that people have been reminded of it.
On a sadder note, though, I must extend our condolences to the Alan Parsons family on the loss of your partner and collaborator, Eric Wolfson. We were so sad to hear about that.
Thank you very much. Yes, we were all very saddened by that, and poor guy had been ill for a number of years, but had been very brave and not really owned up about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a sad day, yes. I was actually on tour in Germany when I got the news. So it was actually, I hesitate to say it, but it was actually fortunate that it happened when it did, because I was close enough to be able to attend the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And... his funeral happened literally 2 days after his death, so I would not have been able to get there if I'd still been here in California. So, but I managed to get a flight up to Glasgow, where his funeral was. And
well, we felt it was important to mention.
Yes.
Because we know how long, you have worked with him, and
we did some good work together.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt you did some great work, Alan, together. You really did. So, again, we wanted to send our condolences to you and of course, the Wolfson family as well. So
well, thank you.
We're sorry to hear about that. And on a lighter note, I was very, very pleased to see that you have, of course, you've got a new album out, but also...
Well, it's kind of an album. It's
what
it's
is it, then?
Only a two-track album.
Okay.
It's a sort of mini you know, an EP, if you like. But it's all based around a recording DVD, which I've been working on for 2 years.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, because, you know, I work here as an administrator for this college radio station, and very big way, I'm an educator as well in teaching these young people about radio, and it was really refreshing to see that the great Alan Parsons is produced his own DVD. It's called The Art and Science of Sound Recording. So I guess this is your way of giving back a little bit, huh?
It is, absolutely. And my partner in crime on the series actually made a similar program back in the 80s. And of course, so much has changed since then. And this series is much more comprehensive. It's over 10 hours of video footage, and it includes interviews with all kinds of well-known producers, engineers, and artists. And we've got great interviews from Michael McDonald, who's an old friend of mine, and Erykah Badu on a more sort of modern level. And it's a wonderful sort of look at recording, all aspects of recording, you know, for anybody that has recording facilities or anybody who is interested in the education that it offers.
Is this something that's going to be made to colleges, or, you know, made available, I should say, to colleges or
absolutely,
universities,
yeah.
and so forth?
We're targeting colleges and sound recording schools very, very fair and square, yes. Does your college have a sound recording department?
Yes, they do.
All right. Well, all they have to do is go to the website, artandscienceofsound.com, and they can see how their faculty people can, you know, get a good deal on getting the DVDs to them.
When you approached this project, how did you approach it? Because I get the feeling that this really wasn't done for accomplished recording engineers, but more so maybe for the layman or the beginner. Is that the pretty much the concept behind it?
You know, we've tried to appeal to everybody. I mean, there's something here for even the most experienced engineers and even producers, because of the interviews, because they want to see what how other people do things.
Yeah,
there's an enormous strength in that knowledge. And although, you know, we've not made it so technical that you know, that a beginner couldn't understand it. A beginner can walk in, you know, right, and learn right from the ground up with this series. But as I said, no matter how much experience you've had, there's useful stuff in here.
Are there any kludges in there?
Any
kludges? Kludges. Years ago they used to call them kludges. The old, basement tricks and home remedies to get certain sounds out of things when you're limited with the tools.
Plenty of secrets in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been one to hold in, you know, my recording secrets. I've never been one not to give those things away. And I think, you know, the same goes for the other people. Through the interviews, you get all kinds of great little snippets. I mean, there's one one from Sylvia Massey, an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Who's worked with Tool amongst many others, and she talks about how a producer had a technique called slippery fader.
Okay.
Which meant that when the chorus came, you just pushed the fader up at 1 dB,
okay,
just a little nudge, and then pulled it back for the verses.
For the verses.
And that was just a little trick that she learned. That she said you feel the difference. You don't really hear the difference, but you feel the difference. So
you know, the recording science, the science of recording, has changed so much over the years, and you've lived through it and worked through it. You know, going back to the years of analog tape, and now we can do everything on a laptop, basically. Do you miss cutting and splicing tape at all?
Yes, I do. I mean, there was a certain enjoyment one got out of fighting to make something happen. You know,
yeah,
you'd fight to get a sound off. You know, I mean,
or an effect.
I'm always being asked about that loop on Money by Pink Floyd on Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah,
I mean, that given today's technology, that would have taken 10 minutes to put together that loop.
Right,
but it was. You know, it took all day, you know, to record the tracks at the right level on a 4-track tape and then splice it up exactly right. It took all day.
That was a 4-track recording.
Well, at the time we were, you know, quadraphonic was the big buzzword.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
I remember that.
We recorded it on 4 tracks so that each sound, you know, on that Money loop would walk around the room. That was the idea.
Fantastic. Now today, of course, we're working with completely different technology. We're in the digital world, and I'm really interested to hear from you. Do you feel that the warmth of the analog sound has been lost in the digital world, and can it be properly recreated, or do you think it's a non-issue?
I think it's becoming more of a non-issue. I mean, there was a time in the early days of digital recording in particular where it was often criticized for being a bit gritty, and I think the word warmth can be mistaken for you know, lack of high end, lack of treble, and digital, you know, faithfully reproduces all the treble frequencies. So I'm of the opinion that the digital technology, or the future of digital technology, will be such that we can exactly duplicate the sound of analog tape if we want to.
Okay.
I mean, it's already here.
It's already here, yeah.
A bit like you can make video look like film.
Yeah.
Most of the sitcoms and what have you that you see on TV are actually shot on videotape, but it looks like film.
Yeah.
And the same applies to sound recording. You can record digitally in such a way that it sounds like analog. And, you know, 10 years from now, when all tape machines have been put on the scrap heap, we're going to say to ourselves, well, what was the fuss all about? You know, this sounds fine, you know, and it's so much easier to deal with than analog tape. But the only slightly sad thing is that, you know, recording has now become a computer operation. You have to, you know, you're clicking a mouse all day rather than, you know, pushing faders up and down. And just for myself, I mean, I've now taken a more traditional producer-only role, and I've started to work with engineers who do all the mouse clicking, and I just concentrate on the music, you know.
Which sometimes can be a little easier, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say I don't ever touch the computer and the mouse, but there are people who are so fast and so and know the programs and the plugins, as we call them. They know all these things backwards and can work a whole lot quicker than I can. So I'm quite comfortable just taking the sort of guy at the back of the room with the big fat cigar saying, I love you guys. I'm going to make you a star. You know, all that.
What's a typical day like in the life of Alan Parsons?
Well, honestly, for the last 2 years, it's been wrapping up the art and science program.
Oh, okay, great.
Doing the sound mixing for that.
Yeah,
the sound dub, the dubbing mixing, we call it. Really, there's been very little time for anything else. But during the course of the making of the series, we did record this one song, All Our Yesterdays, and we did that in a Los Angeles studio with some mega stars of session, you know, mega session players.
Session players, yeah.
Simon Phillips, Nathan East, Rami Jaffe.
Oh, wow.
Tim Pierce. I mean, all, you know, huge names in their fields.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a real joy to do that. We did do it in a all-digital studio, but, you know, we had a nice big console with lots of faders on it to work with to do that.
Oh, nice.
That was nice. But it's all in the program. That's the nice thing about the program, is that you'll see every moment of that recording, you know, right from the beginning, from the playing of the demo to the final mix.
Well, we're going to have to make sure that Lehigh University gets gets this in their hands down there for all of their sound programs down there for what they're doing, all their various courses.
I hope they will.
Oh, I'm
sure.
The
DVDs themselves are about to go to the manufacturers, but you can download the entire program if you so wish online.
Oh, okay. And when will it actually be printed on DVD? How soon can we look forward to that?
2 weeks from now.
Oh, okay. So it's coming soon.
Yeah, very soon.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. I have to ask you this before I let you go. You know, you've contributed so much to our listening world, in, not only in your engineering and producing, but also your songwriting, and you've written some great things over the years. And I wanted to ask you, what has been maybe something that's been really, really near and dear to you over the years that really sticks out as something that you're very, very proud of or fond of? Is there anything?
I'm often asked what my favorite album is of the projects, and I always give the same answer, and that's the first album, The Tales of Mystery.
Yeah, that's still my favorite too.
It was the first child.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of ideas off my chest that I always wanted to try, and it sort of paved the way for an entire series of albums that followed. But Tales of Mystery just comes across to me as my favorite and the one that means the most to me.
As you heard, and when we started this interview, I played the entire first side before we talked to you.
That's great. Thanks so much. I mean, that's becoming a rare thing in the 3-minute world of iPods and downloads.
Yes. Well,
it's great that you're still doing that. That's great.
At college radio here, it's freeform radio. We get to do these kind of things, and it's a wonderful freedom that has left mainstream radio, so we're proud to be able to do these things and feel very honored that we can share this with our listeners. I wanted to ask you, how did you nab Orson Welles? How did you do that, Alan?
I didn't really have any part of getting him to do it. I think the label just waved a check in front of his manager and said, "Will he do it?" And I think he agreed. The sad thing is that I never met him. We sent him the script and said, will you do it?
Yeah.
And then the offer was made, and then a tape arrived on the record company president's desk, and I never met him, so that was so sad. But it was perfect. What he did, it was perfect in every way. And, we couldn't have improved on it. But it would have been nice to be there for the sessions.
For sure. Well, I know that you have other interviews scheduled for today. So I just wanted to say this to you from the bottom of my heart and our listeners' hearts as well. We want to say thank you, Alan Parsons, for the music.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you.
Can you hold the line?
And thank you for continuing to support it. That's great.
We'll be supporting it for as long as we're here, Alan. And as long as you're making the music, we'll keep playing it, man.
Right. Well, thanks so much.
All right. Can you hold the line for a second?
Yeah.